Welcome to the SSP podcast. In this week's, we have some history from Katie Bonner and Callum Martin. Callum starts a weekly series on a history of the left called Making the Flag Red, Struggle in Democracy Through History. Kat Boyd from the ISG will be giving her view on left unity and in particular on the Scottish Left Project. Holly Cameron tells us about a major SSP victory in Stirling University this week. Richie Venton, the SSP's national workplace organiser and regional organiser for the West of Scotland, will speak about the SSP's reaction to the austerity budgets set by councils across Scotland and what the SSP propose instead. And Jerry Mulvena will be explaining how a growing group of volunteers are televising politics throughout Scotland. First music from a socialist supergroup consisting of members of the Blue Tones, Thief Action, and musicians who have worked with the Manic Street Preachers, Paul Weller, and The Alarm, amongst all others. Their album, Solution Songs, will be released in time for the election. In the meantime, listen to the work in progress at soundcloud.com/theCCs. So that's TheCeeCees. Their blurb says, "Emergency, the world needs a revolutionary, socialist, stiff, 78-style R&B band to promote class consciousness, what with there being an election looming. The disturbing rise of the populist right, the demonisation of the poor, and the widespread disengagement with politics means it's essential that we do as much as we can to promote socialism, the social contract, and the post-war settlement before it's too late. Sounds good to me. This is The Concerned Citizens. Have an analysis."
Over the last 2 weeks, we have seen two very potent anniversaries. It was the 50th anniversary of the funeral of Winston Churchill and the 96th anniversary of the Battle of Georgie Square, when troops and tanks were sent into the centre of Glasgow to quell a mass demonstration. What is the link between the two? Well, Churchill was a key member of the then government and played a key role in sending in the troops. The demonstration was around the campaign for a 40 hours working week, and at its height involved several hundred thousand workers in the Clyde going on strike, backed up by the mass demonstrations. The government were so panicked by the events, they feared revolution was about to break out on the Clyde. It is then where the term Red Clydeside was coined. and it was built on the back of earlier campaigns such as the 1915 rent strike. Socialists played a key role in these struggles, none more so than John McLean, who linked the campaign for a 40 hours week to the struggle for an independent Scottish Socialist Republic. Another feature was the prominent role played by women in these struggles. Nearly a century on, socialists in Scotland are still linking radical demands to the campaign for independence and socialism. Whether it be the campaign for a £10 living wage, against anti-trade union legislation, the wider struggle against austerity, or the campaign against Trident, they're opening up a debate about the nature of independence. Independence should not be an end in itself, but a means to a different and better Scotland. There is another similarity between then and now. In 1919, socialists recognised that international solidarity would play a key role in their struggle. They actively reached out to fellow workers in England, both to ask for support and to give support to their struggles. They also sought to build links with the international movement, in particular with the Bolshevik government in Russia and struggles in France and Germany. Today, socialists see the campaign for their radical version of independence as part and parcel of a wider European movement for radical change. Inspired by movements like Syriza in Greece and Podemos in Spain, they put forward the idea that another Scotland and another Europe is possible. Despite the referendum defeat, it is the independence movement in Scotland which is on the march and setting the political agenda, with radical demands increasingly at the heart of its campaign. The Scottish Socialist Party, Scotland's Party of Socialism, is at the forefront of this debate, and this struggle and draws inspiration from those events almost a century ago. In 1919, the red flag flew high over George Square. The SSP is making sure that that red flag remains flying high.
That was Katie Bonner from Scottish Socialist Party's Glasgow South branch. And this is Joe Solo, Never Forgotten and Never Forgiven.
The age of 15, I walked out of the schoolyard and in through the colliery gate. I followed my dad and his dad before him, a minor like calling me mate. Just what you did if you come from this town, son. Start abandoning your soul. Some men are born who have money and power. For me, I was born to mine coal. Never forgotten and never forgiven. The scars from what they did and faded with time. Never forgotten and never forgiven. The memories run deep as the mine. Don't get me wrong, crafty was at some. Went for the faint of heart. And every morning that cage give a latch and it sucks you down into the dark. Everyone there knows what everyone's thinking. It's not said out loud cause we're men. But each man inside he is silently praying that he'll see the daylight again. Never forgotten and never forgiven. Disguised from what they did and faded with time. Never forgotten and never forgiven. The memories run deep as the mine. it's 30 long years since the last whistle sounded until up the call you regets. Shut down this town when the big wheels stop turning and abandoned us all to our fits. Kids grow up knowing there's nothing here for 'em. It's the army or a life on the dole. But they know you never trust Tories or coppers, 'cause their hearts are as black as the coal. Never forgotten and never forgiven, scars from what they did and faded with time. Never forgotten and never forgiven, the memories run deep as the mind. The memories run deep as the mind.
Hi, my name's Kat Boyd. I've been involved in the Radical Independence campaign, and thank you very much for inviting me to speak to your podcast listeners a wee bit about the Scottish Left Project. So I'm very proud of what we've achieved with the Radical Independence campaign and how that's been achieved. I think it's brought together lots of different people from lots of different backgrounds. And when we worked together and we cooperated and we had good relationships based on trust and mutual respect, that the Radical Independence campaign and its vibrancy became the vehicle that transformed the referendum debate. I think it was the Radical Independence movement in itself that helped to shift the vote for Scottish independence from its historical 25% to the incredible 45% that we did eventually achieve. So for me, in post-referendum Scotland, how can we make sure that our movement can exert power and influence after the vote? During the independence campaign, activists and writers often looked to Europe for inspiration, particularly the Nordic countries. But elsewhere in Europe, there's also the awakening of new types of left organisation, the United Left in Slovenia, Podemos in Spain, and of course Syriza in Greece, all of whom command huge popular support. And in comparable countries to our own, the left poll upwards of 10% in the popular vote. And this is something that we think we can achieve in Scotland too, because it's not the case that people in Scotland are against socialist ideas. We think that we can use the energy and vibrancy that we created amongst ourselves, everyone who was involved in Radical Independence, to transform the left in Scotland too. We think Scotland deserves a left with renewed power like the rest of Europe. And to do that, we need the wisdom of people who have struggled for decades and the energy of those whose eyes are just opened. I think that using the good new relationships that we've built up, particularly on the socialist left, that we can begin to make a real challenge for power in Scotland. For people who want to start talking about this, and moving the left into this kind of position, we've created the Scottish Left Project. The Scottish Left Project is just that. It's a project. It's not a party, nor do any of the people involved presume to have all the answers. But we needed a way to begin the conversation with other socialists, radical indie campaigners and activists for social justice about the best way to take left-wing and socialist principles forward into 2016. The goal is to present an effective socialist option under any guise, be it a coalition or anything, onto the ballot paper in 2016. And for that option to reflect the broadness, how inclusive and accessible our ideas are. We want to learn from the very best of the social movement for independence and from the very best parts of the Radical Independence Campaign, which was based on education, empowerment, cooperation and discussion. If we want to make an effective socialist challenge to our own ruling elites in Scotland, as well as beyond, and also to begin to replace a Labour Party that's turned away from its traditions, then we need the right vehicle to do it. And the Scottish Left Project is a space to begin that discussion. In my view, we need this project. It stems from the very core of our beliefs, the desire for a radical redistribution of wealth and power in a Scotland freed from the history of empire and neoliberalism at Westminster. We want Scotland to be independent, of course, but we also want working class people to have a powerful voice. This project isn't just about left unity or bringing together the existing left, but to have discussions and meetings and organising with each other on the basis that left-wing ideas are absolutely necessary in the 21st century. A diverse Scottish Parliament with a multi-party system is the best way to achieve a strong voice for the radical independence that we've campaigned for. And in order to have this kind of Parliament and to work towards an independent and socialist Scotland, I believe every socialist has a huge role to play in this process. That's why I'm delighted to begin this discussion with anyone who wants to have it, and I hope it can put us on the map. We've got a huge opportunity and a massive responsibility to show people that despite the odds, another Scotland is still possible. You can see the initial statement that was signed by people from Syriza in Scotland, from people like Jim Sellers, and of course members of the Scottish Socialist Party. Some new, some established, but leading members of the Scottish Socialist Party. I hope that you'll go and read the statement, and if you want to get involved in having that conversation, then let it begin.
Addicted to her like I'm allergic to gin. Honey Berlin, Honey Berlin. The less she'll turn your flesh to tin. Honey Berlin, Honey Berlin.
If I got beckoned in today, she tread my skin without delay.
Little hands, he don't have a chance with. Lose a lot of, but he gotta. And I'm that far gone in with Miss Honey Berlin.
Who's that waiting by the Brandenburg Gate for Honey Berlin, Honey Berlin? To take a Reichstag fire to break your date with Honey Berlin, Honey Berlin. But she don't want to know. Just ask you where the soldiers go.
She knows that Lieselotta, she don't have a chance with sweet Matilda, but she asks her to dance. And pretty soon her eyes fill with sin. That's the way I feel about Miss Honey Berlin.
And I'm not the only one.
In many a small room, many a tall tale of Honey Berlin, Honey Berlin. I've even heard it said that she was born female. Honey Berlin, Honey Berlin. It's true, she's looking good, like only a natural woman could. The Air Force sergeant, he gets out of the tub, still feeling naked as he enters the club. He learned a thing or two while earning each stride. Wrapped on her finger, now she's smoking his pipe.
I wish I was her type, Honey Berlin.
That was Roy Mahler and Honey Berlin from his album One Domino on Stereogram. Any views in our podcast you agree with or disagree with, please let me know by emailing me at neilwscott@hotmail.com. Earlier, I phoned Richie Venton, the SSP National Workplace Organiser and Regional Organiser for the West of Scotland, and asked him about the party's views on this week's council budgets. This is what he had to say.
Local councils across Scotland are currently meeting to set their budgets for the next 3 years. In every one of the 32 local authorities, there's an exercise in municipal butchery being carried out. Tens of millions of pounds worth are being chopped of jobs, of public services, and of the conditions of the workforces. This is not only an added pain to people already suffering from austerity, but is also entirely unjustified and unnecessary in the view of the Scottish Socialist Party. Now, obviously, this is in the wider context where we're told that the economy is recovering, and yet working class people don't seem to gain any benefits from that growth in capitalist output. We also have the continued savagery of the Tory-led coalition in Westminster, which is at the root of the council cuts. They are conducting at least £57 billion worth more of cuts currently. And they're doing that on the allegation that they need to do so because we have to balance the books. Well, when it comes to balancing the books, they're not very good at that when it's the issue of asking big business and the rich to pay the measly taxes they're meant to pay, because there's an industrial-scale corrupt tax-dodging exercise going on in Britain and internationally. The HSBC scandal only highlights the very tip of a huge iceberg of tax dodging by the rich and by corporations, which in turn, of course, means even more savage cuts being carried out by the British government towards working class people and the services and jobs they depend upon. In Scotland, what we suffer is successive years of cuts in the block grant from Westminster. That in turn is passed on by the Holyrood government to local authorities. Already since 2010, 35,000 jobs have disappeared in local government alone, and Unison, the biggest union in that sector, still fear that up to 40,000 jobs will be chopped in the next 3 years in the councils across Scotland. That's devastating for a society already scarce of full, decent jobs. And the types of services that have been cut range from women's aid refuges for women fleeing domestic abuse being cut of their funds by local authorities in a number of different areas. It includes attempts to cut the day for school children. It's cutting the hot meals for children in some areas, cutting back on staff in education, in social care and services, street cleaning being cut back upon, and of course in general job losses, hundreds in some areas, well beyond that in the bigger councils. And job losses means in turn heavier workload for the workforces that remain. The savagery goes on, and it's on top of previous years of doing the same. And the fundamental point I would make about this is that it's absolutely unjustified and unnecessary. First of all, there's no need for cuts if the rich paid their taxes. Secondly, the Scottish government should discover a backbone and turn fine words into deeds and stand up in defiance of the cuts being issued by Westminster. We all know that the Tory-Liberal coalition are to blame, but the SNP government should then in turn say that they're refusing to pass on a single penny in cuts to jobs or services and defy them and mobilise a campaign of the Scottish people to win back some of the stolen billions from Westminster. But in turn, councils across the country, made up of a whole combination of Labour-led councils, SNP-led councils, SNP-Labour coalition in, for example, Edinburgh, coalitions between the Tories and Labour and the SNP, all sorts of mixtures of the mainstream parties are implementing these cuts. They're not standing up for local people, they're standing on their heads and carrying out the diktats, ultimately, of Westminster. I believe what they should do is set defiance budgets, no cuts budgets, that says They're not taking a single penny off services. They're not getting rid of a single job. In fact, what they should be doing is expanding them, because both are needed. But as a minimum, holding on to the little that we have, refusing the carriers any cuts, and then mobilise the workforces and the local communities and user groups in a campaign to demand back some of the stolen millions. And on top of that, we believe that there should be an immediate emergency introduction of a different form of local government financing. Right now, the council tax is an extremely regressive, unfair system. It's part of an unfair tax system where when the rich do pay any taxes, which is rare, they don't actually pay the same proportion of their income as the poorest. And the council tax is an example of that. So the Scottish Socialist Party, since we were formed, have called for the abolition of the council tax. Not for it to be frozen, as the SNP have done, but to be abolished, to be put into cold storage in that sense. Abolished and replaced by an income-based progressive tax, a Scottish service tax, where people pay according to their income and their ability to pay. And that, the advantage of that is twofold. It would redistribute wealth on a modest scale, the rich paying their fair share for once, but also, on the last figures that we calculated and we're updating them, it would have meant 4 years ago exactly twice as much income for local jobs, local services, as was available from the council tax system. So I believe the councils should discover a collective spain, whether they're Labour and SNP, and stand up for the local people, or if they're not prepared to set no-cuts budgets and stand up for the people that elected them, they should stand down and allow those of us who are prepared to fight back and defy the government cuts from Westminster to replace them as councillors. That's the message from the Scottish Socialist Party. So it's defy the cuts, organise against them, and demand that the councillors be part of that struggle, and if not, for them to stand aside and be replaced by socialist councillors.
Seven.
Susan Jewell and Flowers Against My Dress. You can hear more of Susan and see her brilliant artwork on susanjewell.com. Exciting things have been happening with Stirling University Branch SSP. This is Holly Cameron, the newly elected Student Union Vice President, to explain.
It's an exciting time for the University of Stirling Students Union. Andrew Cannell and myself, Holly Cameron, we were both just elected to the positions of Union President and Vice President of Education, respectively. The positions were hard fought and hard won, and it was a very exciting time for the whole student body to see the campaigns that were so passionately fought with such issues really focusing on the students' welfare and student benefit. Andrew stood on a platform that was anti-austerity, anti-cuts, anti-privatisation, and sought to lower the prices of rents, which have gone over £500 at the moment, which is more than the minimum loan that SAS will offer for students who are on a high income, whose families are on a high income. Andrew got a resounding mandate. He won by 886 votes over 397. Many of the policies that he put forward were very popular. He had a mix of ideological driven policies and alcohol prices driven policies, which you do certainly need to do if you are running for Student Union President. The support for Andrew was all very positive. A lot of people seem to support his politics. He has said that while he'll keep Scottish Socialist Party principles at heart, he does need to sort of moderate himself as Union President and take all student political views into account, which I think is good enough. I think he'll do a brilliant job. I think his mandate shows that there is a dramatic pull to the left from students. Students are wanting to see more radical politics from their unions in the face of what we see as lad culture. It are all students, not just women students, men students as well. I want to see this. I'm really, really keen to make sure that unions get back to being what unions truly are. So it was a very difficult campaign, but Andrew himself was very calm throughout all of it. I'm sure he'll do very well personally as well as professionally in the role. Stirling Students Union has a very good head for it through the next year in the face of what are going to be some very sort of difficult changes with accommodation. Rumours abound that prices are set to rise again, but hopefully Andrew will combat that as best he can. All that remains is just to thank everybody, especially within the Scottish Socialist Party, even if you weren't a student, for your moral support. Andrew and I noticed a lot that there were a lot of posts, a lot of tagging, a lot of well wishes and a lot of congratulations afterwards. So thank you very much, and we look forward to taking on our new roles, as well as, of course, still remaining very active within the party. Thank you.
This is the Cathode Ray and Creature of Habit.
to the Yes Cafe again for another live internet stream.
Welcome to Independence Live. We are going to be doing some filming over here.
I would also like to say thank you to the guys at Indie Live.
We really appreciate, and I think we should give you a round of applause to the people here who have been filming the conference. It's been streaming all day.
Tune in at www.independencelive.net. Okay?
So, what is Independence Live? It began in September 2013 when a couple of people figured out it was pretty easy to broadcast events live to an unlimited online audience with just a mobile tablet or smartphone and an internet connection. By the end of the referendum campaign a year later, Independence Live had become a grassroots collective of a dozen active volunteers across Scotland and beyond with 124 broadcasts in our archive. We covered all sorts of events, town hall meetings, outdoor rallies and protests, one-to-one interviews, press conferences. These were all broadcast live, often giving the viewers a chance to engage with the people at the event in real time. Post-referendum, the demand for our services has, if anything, increased. Our team of live streamers has grown to 25 volunteers responsible for the further 120 broadcasts. Scotland has woken up and needs the emerging alternative media to challenge the spin and news management of the old politics. There are many ways you can support us. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and most importantly on livestream.com, so you receive a notification every time we go live. Watch our live broadcasts and explore our archive, available in full from our website independencelive.net. Please make a donation to our Indiegogo crowdfunding appeal on the website. Without all that support, we wouldn't be where we are today. Tell your friends about what we do. Anyone can be an Indie Live volunteer. If you have access to an Android tablet or iPad, download the Livestream app and find out for yourself how easy it is to do what we do. Get in touch if you want to join us. I'll leave the last word to the SSP's own Kevin McVeigh.
Back to where I started, the people here are filming us have done it for free, which we really appreciate. There is a website, and it's www.independencelive.net. And I would encourage people to access that and to click their support for the work that has been done there. Alternative media, as the campaign showed, is critical in disseminating the truth rather than the lies in the mainstream media. And MD is attempting to do that. I think we should do our best to support. So thanks again. And go have a look, see what's there. You might even see yourself at the conference today, which will probably terrify you, because that's what happens when you're on the telly. Okay?
And South Australia I was born, and South Australia round Cape Horn, all the way you're roving king, all the way you hear me sing. I rode up one morning fair, a chance to meet Miss Nancy Blair. All the way you rode it, King, all the way you hear me sing. The town, all the way you're roving king, all the way you hear me sing. I run all night, I run all day, I run until we sail away. All the way you're roving king, all the way you hear me sing. The
my mind to leave this fancy there behind. Call me your Roman king. Call me, you hear me sing. Wish the friendship never been born. All the way you know and king. All the way you hear me sing. And sun. All the way you're over, king. All the way you hear me sing. I wish I was on Australia, sun, with a bottle of whiskey in my hand. All the way you're roving king. All the way you hear me sing. I'm a bow for South Australia. I'm a bow for South Australia.
When on the 31st of January 1919, some 60,000 protesters gathered in the streets of Glasgow, many in the Westminster government feared that Scotland was on the verge of giving rise to an outright armed revolution. Glaswegian regiments were confined to Maryhill Barracks for fear of a revolutionary mutiny, and as police and protesters continued to clash in the streets, thousands of further troops, supported by artillery and tanks, were moved in to attempt to quash any thought of armed struggle. I'm Callum Martin of Edinburgh South SSP, and welcome to the first part of Making the Flag Red, looking at struggle and democratic movements through history. Today we'll be looking at Red Clydeside. For many, that date, the 31st of January 1919, has gone down as the defining moment of the Red Clydeside story, but the process of events that led there stretches back several years. Red Clydeside, in its broadest definition, incorporates a great many campaigns and social protests along the way to that date, many going right back to long before the First World War even began. Keeping for a moment to the context of the war itself, the anti-war movement is a good example of one such strand. For all we are now told of a nation having been swept gleefully and naively into the fires of war, there were many at the time who spoke out against it. John McLean was, after all, himself imprisoned for this, amongst other issues. He was not a lone voice in the wilderness in saying so either. Many others spoke out against the war, with a particular network building up around the Independent Labour Party, the ILP. As the war progressed, further elements came forward. With so many men away in the front lines, many landlords believed that they would have an even more free hand than usual to push for higher and higher rents. Mary Barber, the great hero of the Scottish Socialist Movement, came to great prominence in this period for her role in organising and leading rent strikes. The rent strikers, together with the trade unions of the ILP, would provide an increasing worry for the Liberal-led government at Westminster, who feared they could disrupt the war effort. It was through such fears that Westminster was eventually pushed to make concessions towards controls on rent and housing. Now, the need for a strong, coherent party that could speak out for working communities after the war was over was present in the minds of many, and we should not be surprised to see that the ILP tripled in size in Glasgow in the space of only a few years, at a rate that wouldn't conclusively be surpassed for the socialist left until the SSP's mass expansion in the days following the 2014 independence referendum. Many, such as Barbara, would continue their work after the war as part of the Labour Party as a result of these ideas. Now, the Liberal Party that previously dominated Scottish politics was beginning to face a crisis as a result of this. The Scottish Socialist and Labour movement was clearly beginning to make a significant dent into the Liberals' claims of being the party best placed to represent the working classes. And with something close to universal suffrage, the right to vote, being introduced in 1918, the Liberals suddenly found themselves losing control of an electorate they had previously believed they would almost universally have the backing of. Indeed, all this meant that by the 31st of January 1919, Glasgow had undergone a political transformation. Previously a hub of the Scottish Liberal Party, the city was now seen by many of its own Liberal MPs as a nest bed of revolution. There was to be no Bolshevik-style revolution that day in Scotland, but there had been a revolutionary change in the nature of Scottish politics. In the 1922 elections, the Labour Party and the ILP swept the city of Glasgow. James Maxton and many of the ILP MPs who found themselves at Westminster had been elected on a full-blooded platform of a Scottish Parliament, substantial reform of taxation, mass house-building programmes, and great investment in education. Maxton and the ILP found themselves sitting substantially to the left of many in the Labour Party by all accounts. But that process and story warrants a segment of its own. So what can we say then of Red Clydeside, looking back? Well, Red Clydeside is perhaps viewed not as a best viewed, perhaps not as a sudden moment in which Scotland reached the verge of a revolution that never came, but as a process of arguably revolutionary shifts in the Scottish political landscape over the course of several years. Groups such as the ILP had, through their endeavours to build a mass socialist or a Labour Party, laid the groundwork for Red Clydeside over the course of many years preceding the war. It was the ideas and structures they built that would in many ways provide the basis into which the community campaigns and trade unions could come together in the heightened atmosphere of during the war and post-war Scotland to ensure that Westminster could not simply sit by and ignore the social and economic problems inflicted upon so many by the systematic exploitation prevalent through so much Scotland, and to ensure that those responsible could not believe they were beyond answerability. Clearly there's many lessons we can learn for today. Next week, though, we'll be taking a look at a revolution which most definitely was armed. Next week, we're off to 18th century Paris to take a look at the French Revolution and its impact on the European continent as a whole. Until then, I've been Callum Martin. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Callum. The previous track was South Oz from Travel Cat. Details of all the artists will be on the ssp.podbean.com podcast site. David Rovix posted the next song on his YouTube channel last night. It's a song in memory of Dia Barakat, Yusur Abu Salah and Razan Abu Salah, killed on Tuesday, February the 10th, by a deranged man.
He was 46 years old. He had two parking places. He got angry if one of the residents took one of the visitor spaces. In the apartment complex that might provide one little clue that this middle-aged man had accomplished little that he set out to do. He spewed anger at all of his neighbors, and he hated religion so much. Maybe that's why he moved to the Bible Belt, because hatred is such a good crutch. He spewed anger about all religions, with his back against the wall. Why stop at just hating one of them, when you can just hate them all? Another angry white American man with a gun. Another angry white American man. He was 46 years old. He didn't live among his peers. Neighbors mostly younger by about 24 years. Neighbors from all over, some in religious dress. But what in hell the man was thinking, we can only try to guess. Another angry white American man with a gun. Another angry white American man. He was 46 years old. His neighbors had a meeting last year to talk over what they might do about this man they feared. He carried a loaded pistol, no telling what might inspire him to pull it out one day and fire, fire, fire. Another angry white American man with a gun. Another angry white American man. Another angry white American man with a gun. Another angry white American man.